for the benefits and services previously paid for by Medicare. It also says, quote, the agency shall seek permission from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services to be the administrator for the Medicare program in Vermont. Do we really want the folks who wasted nearly $100 million on the Vermont Health Connect website assuming responsibility for administering our Medicare?
Learn more facts about Vermont's single-payer health care plans and who voted for them at ethanallen.org. Paid for by the Ethan Allen Institute. All right, we're back. Let's give a nice warm Radio Vermont welcome this morning. Dan Feliciano is joining us here in our studios. He's the Libertarian candidate running for governor. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me, Mark.
So what did you think of the Free Press opinion page this morning, their endorsement for another term for Peter Shumlin? What did you think of their editorial?
I wasn't surprised by it, you know, besides the grammar. but of course...
You picked up on that too.
And I'm not a big grammar guy, but besides the grammar, I'm not surprised at all. But you know, they go into great details about essentially the failures of the administration, and it's hard to pick out what he has actually done right. And then, I just don't understand it, right? So that they spent a huge time on the failures, and then they say, oh, we're going to come out and endorse them anyway, right? So. You know, what they say, third time's the charm. So what, do we have to totally fall on our face? But I'm surprised by it. Not surprised by it, I meant.
There's a story in Vermont Digger I want to ask you about this morning, too. They're reporting, they're getting into this controversy over Medicare, whether or not the administration wants to, quote, unquote, take over Medicare, as you described it.
Right.
And they say that it's now clear that the legislature in the 2014 session overwrote that piece of the law and that there is not going to be an attempt to go after Medicare. Does that take away a big argument you got?
I think... I'm still looking greatly into this, and we're looking into the Act 48 language as well. So I was totally taken back that, you know, somehow we missed this, and what, you know, the website had missed, you know, information on it, if you will. But I still think that when you start looking at what has to happen to make the single payer successful, all's in. And I think that includes the Medicare. So I still think that's an issue. And if they can take it out, they can put it back in. So I haven't backed down from it just yet.
Why does Medicare have to be in to make it work? Those people will already be covered, presumably.
They'd be covered, presumably, right. But however, those dollars, if we get a waiver, all those dollars can come into the state. And then the state can use that money to do, you know, essentially what the insurance companies have been, cost shifting, right, but at the state level.
Okay.
I think we need all that. We need as much money as we can to make this single payer work. And the only way it's actually going to work is DC is going to have to drop a lump of cash in our lap somehow. It's just economically not feasible right now without a huge tax increase.
What's the concern? If I were on Medicare, what should I be worried about in your view on this?
I'd worry about seeing the service, reduced services, and because I really think it's going to start looking more like Medicaid, and they're going to start shifting those cost services up. But I think overall, the services that are going to be available or the doctors providing those services are going to start to shrink and go away.
Don't you think that people would just go berserk if that happened?
Yep, I think they're already going berserk. You can hear the radio ads already. I think people are aware that this is quite possible, and I think they realize it will happen if single payer goes through.
Okay, but if the money even flowed through Vermont, right. I mean, my understanding is that the benefit package is not one that you could tinker with. Is that your understanding?
Once we get an all-payer waiver, I believe that you can start to tinker. It's no longer federally controlled. I believe that the benefits and the payments of those benefits can be tinkered with.
Okay. Yep. Why is everybody else saying that's not true?
Because they keep saying that we're getting a waiver, but you still have to follow the federal guidelines. I don't believe that's the case. If I was to give you a waiver to do what you want on your property, you'll do what you want on your property, right?
What do you want to do on health care?
Yep. As I've said in the past, I still believe the free market is the best way to go. For bringing in more insurers, and people say we've tried that in the past. We haven't tried it in the past. We've been limited in the number of insurers that we've had in the past. And what's really driving healthcare costs are, you know, I keep talking about is the chronic illness and chronic diseases and obesity, to be perfectly frank right now. So we need to hone in. I want to bring in more insurers, see what we can do to have more than two, right? Let's say we get six or 10. They can provide niche products that still fall in line with the Affordable Care Act. that then they'll compete on the premium side, and then we really start to hone in with the doctors, the insurers, and the patients to make sure they follow their disease management protocols and things like that.
Why do you think there aren't more insurance companies here in Vermont?
The regulations are really tough. I worked for two large insurers, and we were always skeptical about coming to Vermont just because of the way the rating systems were based, and just being able to be profitable. People think the insurance companies are making huge amounts of money. People are so concerned about counting the insurance company's money rather than looking at what those insurance companies are doing and taking on the risk of insuring you.
Okay, but so yeah. That means you're talking about getting rid of community rating.
We can adjust it, but there has to be some sort of adjustment to that community rating, because it's not, you always hear the progressives and the Democrats talk about what's fair. Is it fair for a young 21-year-old person who's extremely healthy to pay the same as someone who has not taken an older person who has not taken care of their health, right? So I think you need to entice the insurance companies to come in and be able to predict what they're making.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
But there would be people, would there not, who would be seriously negatively affected if community rating were to go away?
Yeah, well, other states have adjusted community rating systems, and they still insure people, and there's still other ways of making sure they get care, right? There's other plans and policies that actually help them. There's other insurance, like the Christian, what's the place? I used to work in Milwaukee, the Christian Healthcare Network, which is an insurance company. They provide $425 a month for their premiums, and they provide great healthcare, as well, and have open access.
Okay. What does adjusted community rating mean?
Yeah, so adjusted community rating can mean we would have to define it, but it's a way of separating or creating different risk pools, if you will, so that you can better spread your risk among different kind of payers. So you can say, all right, if a healthy young person would pay this kind of premium, or would be in this risk rating, a middle-aged person would be in this rating, someone who's unhealthy would be in this rating. But what it does is give the insurance companies leverage to incentivize people in their health care.
If I'm born with a chronic condition, I should be penalized for that?
There's always going to be care for those, and the federal government does a great job of taking care of it, right? So I don't think that's going to be the case. And Vermonters and people as a whole are very charitable. Look at the Michael Dell Foundation in Austin, Texas. He donated billions of dollars to provide the best cystic fibrosis treatment to kids in the world, right? Basically free. So I don't think that's going to be the case. There's always going to be someone to take care of people as a whole. And I worry about that. Remember, I have a special needs child, right, who will probably never be independent. So that's one of the things I have to worry about. I'm saving for two lifetimes of retirement, and I have to make sure she's going to have the health care that I think she deserves.
Do you get any sort of help on that, tax credits, anything, any sort of financial help on that?
There's Medicaid that kids can qualify for and that you can get, and it's a federal law about who can get it once you're diagnosed, and it does two things. Not only can you use it if you find a doctor that'll take it, but the school systems can use it as well. So when the schools provide special ed services to children, they can charge that back to Medicaid and get reimbursement, and it doesn't come through the regular school budgeting process. It comes in through a back door.
We're talking with Dan Feliciano. He's the Libertarian candidate for governor. 244-1777 is our local number. Toll free 877-291-8255. Getting a lot of ink these days, Dan, that there were some Republicans wanting to get you out of the race. So what happened with this discussion with Senator Joe Benning wanting you to drop out in favor of Scott Milne?
Right. So I've never confirmed or denied that there was a meeting, and many people have asked me in the past to step down, and I see Joe Benning all the time. He's been a very, very kind guy to me, and he's expressed that, in other settings that he'd like me to step out of the race. But I think at this point, where I am in a race, it's not practical. If Scott had a platform, if the Republican candidate really had a platform, I would really, that might have been a different story. Remember, I've said all from the beginning that if the Republicans had put someone on the ticket that was really focused on cutting spending and stopping single payer, I probably would have never ran. So I think it's important to keep the dialogue of cutting spending and stopping the single payer healthcare system, using an alternative approach of opening up the markets and focusing on disease management is critical. And that conversation has gone far, and it's created a new dynamic actually in the whole race. Think about it. If I wasn't in the race, single payer, no one would be talking about single payer, right? I'm the one who's really talking about that.
Just so I'm clear here, when you're just talking about Senator Joe Benning, did you say that he's been kind to you or unkind to you?
He's been both kind and unkind. We're okay. He's been good to me. Of course he's concerned about the GOP, which I'm not part of, right? And I don't know. You read about the divisiveness or something that happened in there to riff, and I'm not aware of it because I'm not in the GOP, so. And I try to stay out of it. I don't want to get in the middle of what's happening in the GOP because I think the state of Vermont needs to have strong parties, a strong Libertarian Party, a strong Republican Party, a strong Democratic Party.
But do you really think right now, 8 days out here, you can win?
I'm going to stay in and we'll see what happens. I think when you think about what's going on, I'm the only one really talking about solutions. You have Governor Shumlin, who's running on his platform of give me a third chance to fix everything I broke, right? Quite frankly, his administration's been a disaster. He can't even keep the Medicare, he can't even keep the statutes updated on the website, never mind Vermont Health Connect. The Republican candidate, who no one really knows what that candidate stands for, but me, where I have a clear platform and everyone understands. You may not like some of the issues, but at least you know what you're getting.
244-1777, that's our local number in Central Vermont. Toll free, 877-291-8255. What's going on with your fundraising? There's a piece that came out over the weekend, John Walters at the Vermont Political Observer. Right. Looks as though all of the money you raise has basically come from you.
Yes, essentially it has right now. So I think, we've been, fundraising hasn't been strong for us, but we're committed to the message and staying in. And we have a lot of supporters, but they just can't afford, to contribute, and they do what they can, right? Social media has been very helpful to us and things like that, low-cost alternatives. But we haven't had a lot of money, and fortunately, my wife and I had some resources set aside to carry out this message and get it out there. And I think it's money well spent. And the way my wife put it this morning, it was your civic duty to do this. I said, in 2 years, it's hers.
Okay. That's an announcement right
now.
No. Do you think your wife would do better than you would in a race or not?
People seem to like her better.
So you're going to drop, about 30 grand of your own money on this?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Wow.
Yeah.
Really? You think that's really worth it?
Yeah, I think it's that important. I think it's a small investment to make to open up and have a more robust conversation. I think I honestly believe it was me that's forcing Governor Shumlin to spend as much money as he has. He didn't spend his money last time, right? He's burning through his money. And I think clearly my message of cutting spending and the Vermont Health Connect and separate and distinct, and then the single payer separate and distinct from that has gotten people's attention, and people are starting to think differently about it because I can talk about healthcare differently because I have the broadest view of all the candidates.
Have you been actively asking people for money?
Oh, yeah. That's the hardest part. I've never asked anyone for money until this campaign, calling up, and it's been brutal. But I've asked people for money. People have been generous, and some people have been generous. You can see it on the reports. And other people are just like, I'm sitting this campaign out.
So, okay. Yeah. What about all those people, the Republicans, who are dissatisfied with Scott Mill? Why aren't they all listed in your thing here?
Right. I think they're sitting out on the bench. They're sitting on the sidelines and waiting to see what happens. I think they'll vote, but they're not going to put their money on it. And think about it. If they're part of this organization, I always say people are motivated. People are motivated by three things: power, achievement, and affiliation. And I think maybe there's this affiliation that they still want to be affiliated with the party despite the discontent. I really believe that when it comes election day, many Republicans who in the past were going to hold their nose and vote for the Republican candidate will say, vote on principle. People this year, I honestly believe, are looking at principles over party. And I've gotten a huge number of Democratic supporters as well that said, I don't like what Pete's done. He's been a failure. He's let me down. I'm going to vote for you because I can't vote for a Republican. And subsequently, there's a lot of Republicans that are dissatisfied that said, rather than hold my nose, I'll vote for you, in private.
Well, the Libertarians could get major party status at the very least if you got 5%, right?
Right. I believe that's the case, yes. Mm-hmm.
What would be success here in this? What would make it have worth you dropping 30 grand?
Yeah, so what would be... to see the continued conversation on cutting spending and stopping the single payer. I really think those things are a huge issue. You know, you hear about property taxes and making up revenue and adjusting the taxes and all that stuff. That's great. But the fundamental problem is spending. Even Governor Shumlin himself said it's spending. You know, everyone agrees it's spending, but no one is willing to do anything about it. And I think with my skills and background, it brings an interesting take because I can find the spending. And even now, you're seeing everyone at first said it was irresponsible for me to think I can cut 5 to 10%. Well, Pete Shumlin just said, hey, state employees, I want you to figure out how to take 5 to 7% of your budget without providing any operational support, which I can bring to the table. You heard the Republican candidate said that he's going to provide single payer, what I call single payer education, right? By forcing this, you know, by having the schools cut 30% of their spending and redistribute that money to higher education, right? Now, all of a sudden, it's not that hard. So I think that's another conversation I contributed to, that it is possible and we can do it. But I would look at it doing it more responsibly.
Moment of your time for our friends at Green Mountain Access. If you're looking for an outstanding local internet service provider, make it our friends at gmavt.net. You can call them toll-free at 1-888-321-0815 and on the web, gmavt.net. Let's talk about spending here for a moment. Let's talk about schools and then let's talk about state government. Actually, let's talk about state government first. So where do you cut state government? Yeah.
There's huge opportunities to cut state government in the sense that think about even like the Vermont Health Connect. They say that's going to cost $26 and $36 million a year. We can get rid of that. So that's right off the bat. You have organizations like Efficiency Vermont, right? They really don't do anything. I've had people reach out to them. They haven't helped them in any way. That's better done by a nonprofit or profitable organization. We can consolidate all these economic entities that exist today, right? You have all these separate little economic little organizations within the state with lots of duplicity. We can consolidate those services and de-hassle government and cut costs there.
Tell me, what are you talking about with that?
When you look at all these little economic organizations within the state, I have a list of them. I was looking at the org chart. There's one that provides grants for this. There's another one that'll provide this for small businesses. It's a very fractured economic.
Within government?
Within the state, okay. Yeah. Within the state, right? So we can consolidate that, make sure we're all focused and doing the right thing, reduce a lot of redundancies there.
But, okay.
So those are the inmate healthcare costs. Think about it. If I were Governor Shumlin and I said I can reduce healthcare costs, I would have started with the healthcare, with the inmate healthcare costs. We're spending like $11,000 a year per inmate on healthcare, second highest in the country, right?
Okay.
So there's all these other things I would have done first to demonstrate that we can cut costs and do other things to improve the government.
Okay. Efficiency Vermont, though, is an add-on to your electric bill. It doesn't really have anything to do with state government.
It needs to go, right? It's an add-on to my electric bill, which I don't need, that provides no benefit. So I'm just talking, there's lots of little things like that in the government that are you know, that you're paying for that needs to go, that's being managed by the state in some way.
Okay. Yeah. And what are you basing that Efficiency Vermont has done nothing?
I've had them. I've spoken to lots of people, and you don't get your bang for the buck, and there's no reason why it should fall under any purview of the state. Let other companies take care of that.
Okay.
That's just a little thing. I was just like picking out things that I've seen off my list. I don't have my iPad in front of me, but I have a whole list of things that can be consolidated or I think shouldn't be part of the core state services. Remember, I'm a fan of shrinking government down to provide the core basic services that are required. The government's gotten way too big. Subsequently, that affects property taxes and spending.
Okay.
So there's we feel good about a lot of these programs, and they make sense to people. But when you start looking at them on paper, it doesn't make sense.
Just let me remind you, though, Efficiency Vermont is not part of state government. Has nothing to do with state government.
It's overseen.
I mean, it's an add-on to your electric bill. And honestly, I mean, I've interviewed a ton of people from this organization. Sure. There are a lot of people that are big fans of it. I think it's done wonders for them.
Okay. I couldn't disagree more, but that's okay.
All right. Let's talk about the schools. So where's the money in the schools?
Yep. We talk about spending and school spending and then income sensitivity. It's said that 70% of people are in income sensitivity, which means they're not really paying property taxes, right? Think about it. It's adjusted, right? What is it, 1.8%, right? So I think that what we need to do is really have the schools take total control of their expenditures rather than having Montpelier figure out an algorithm, make sure we're spending, we have an equal distribution and send it back. And I know there's the Brigham Law and things like that, but we need to look at a better way of making people really more accountable for their spending that they have, and let the principals and superintendents dictate what they're spending their money on and how they're doing it, and let the school boards and the community decide if it's a good thing or a bad thing.
All right, how do you do that and stay within Brigham?
Right, so I think we need to figure out what we can do with Brigham and if what adjustments and what adjustments can be made to it, or, and even further challenge it. Right, this thing has had a, it hasn't done any, has, would you consider it a success? We're at $17,000 a year per pupil. I don't think it's really done anything to drive up costs or create more innovation in the schools to develop better outcomes. So I think that needs to be revisited.
Okay, and yeah. And so you want to re-challenge Brigham?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Let's go to the phone. So let's go to Bristol. Wendy, good morning. How's it going?
Good morning, Mark. How are you?
Good.
Good. Yeah. Efficiency Vermont does a whole lot for the state. I'm really shocked to hear this guy talking about bad-mouthing Efficiency Vermont, because they've done a lot to try to help Vermonters identify ways to be more efficient in their homes and do it more economically. They're not only saving the state money, but they're also a model that's been recognized nationally and is being spread to other parts of the state. So they've come in and helped me do an energy efficiency audit at my house and provided some rebates that made that more economical, not only for an efficiency audit, but for a heat pump. They provide incentives to help people do all sorts of things that make it more economical to get started in efficiency, because those are oftentimes the obstacles. But that is the best way we can be more energy efficient in the future. So I'll get off the line and let him respond to that.
All right. Thanks for your call.
No response. I think you had a great experience, and I'm happy for you. I think that's great. I've known many other people who haven't had nearly as a good experience. So good for you. I think that's great.
What's happened when your friends have called them?
Right, so they wouldn't come in and audit the building, or the services and the testing that were done were so inadequate. It just wasn't worth the effort. Yeah.
Let's talk about IBM and the announcement last week. Is this good news, bad news, or neither?
I think it's neither. I think so. I've been part of large divestitures and acquisitions in the past. It's very standard of what happened there. I don't think this has anything to do, I'll be the first, probably the only one to say, it has shocked everyone, that there's nothing really Governor Shumlin can do. This is a corporate decision. IBM's a global business. Everyone knew they were getting out of this business a long time ago when you saw their strategy, and they just happened to unload the business on GlobalFoundries, and GlobalFoundries has made a near-term commitment to keep the jobs here, which is a good thing,
mm-hmm.
Right? So we'll see what happens, right? These things, what will happen is GlobalFoundries will start taking a hard operational look at it, which IBM probably hasn't done in the past because they weren't focused on it, and see what they can do with that business and decide what will be made there and what will be made elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
But for the meantime, they said they're committed to keeping the workforce as it is, and let's see what happens.
All right. So if you were elected, you would have a hands-off policy with them? What would you do?
These are global decisions made on a global marketplace that a little state like Vermont really can't influence. We all know that they have that beautiful new plant in Malta, right? I actually got a call for them to go work for them in Malta, right? So we'll see what happens. I don't think, unless Vermont is willing to give them huge tax subsidies to offset the cost of being here, that there's anything we can do. And I'm not sure if those tax subsidies are actually beneficial there, that money could be best used elsewhere.
Mm-hmm. Getting back to the school system, are teachers paid too much?
I don't know if teachers are paid too much. As I don't know if but when I retire, I'd like to be a third or fourth grade math or science teacher. But I think, I think teachers have a hard job and they do a lot. And I think that I don't necessarily know if they're paid. I wouldn't know if they were paid too much. This is a marketplace, and the market determines how the teachers get paid. But I think they have a hard job there, more so now, where I find that the parents aren't as engaged as they once were with their kids' education. But we have great teachers, and I'm supportive of our teachers. You know, you people are bashing the union and things like the union and the NEA and things like that. But the teachers themselves, we've had some really great experiences. Maybe it's just where I live, but I cannot. You know, I think teachers have a tough job, like I said, and I think they probably earned that money.
The Vermont Health Connect website. What would you do about that now? Yeah.
I don't know if that's ever going to come back online. I understand that Oracle has just released a new set of patches. Oracle's a software company, and I believe it's on that code base that may present problems and has presented problems for other clients. But I think that Vermont Health Connect is not coming. It's not going to be ready for open enrollment, or if it is, it's not going to be reliable. So once again, as I said in the past, we're better off probably moving on to the federal exchange. And people say, but we're going to lose all these subsidies. What's the subsidy? How much in subsidies are we actually going to lose? That becomes the question.
Let's go to West Brookfield. Jonathan, good morning.
Yes, good morning. So, Dan, I am going to vote Libertarian, and I hope I've got my reasons straight. And I really feel strongly that there's a dialogue led in government that involves delegating what constitutes a federal issue, what constitutes a state issue, what constitutes a town issue, and what services are best taken care of by the private sector, and which ones can be delegated to nonprofit. And I really think it's an important dialogue to have and recognize people that there are lots of services that are great, but maybe they're not best served by government.
Oh, no, yeah.
And that, you know, with a meat cleaver kind of, let's just not have this, let's just not have this, isn't necessarily what the party is about, but it's looking at where can it best be served. So I'll take your response off the air.
Yeah, so I agree with you, actually. What I'm saying is I don't want it. So there's a lot of services that the state are providing that could be done elsewhere, right? So I'm for local control and for allowing people and the communities to decide what they want. I don't think people should be coerced into buying health care and paying for all these other services. So I'm right in line with you. I think the government, the state, the federal and state government need to, you know, get back to their core functions and operate that way rather than start taking over everything.
What else would fall into that category of just not an appropriate role for government?
Yeah, so I'm having a hard time looking at the state. I'm focused on the state government of analyzing all the organizations, and I still haven't cracked that nut yet of what these organizations are and what their missions are and how they actually address things. But there's all sorts of the government needs to get out of everything. They're monitoring everything. They're controlling everything, many things, I'll say, and that I don't think they should be in. I don't think they should be as actively involved in healthcare as they are. I don't think they should be out there figuring out who they're going to subsidize and not subsidize. That's up for the entrepreneurs and for the businesses to decide. So they're out there playing with our money, taking bets on what the future is going to be, which I don't think they should be doing.
What you mean, something like the blueprint for health that Governor Douglas put in? Would you object to something like that?
I don't think the government should be controlling it, right? So I think it's okay for the government to say, hey, you know what, we had some resources here and we put this idea together of how things can work, right? So I think we can start a conversation, for instance, around coordination of care, which is a big thing in the healthcare community, managing the chronic illness and disease. I don't think there's anything wrong with, you know, helping and facilitating that kind of work, because everyone's going to win. But I don't think it should be the government's role, and it should be, you know, government controlling it, and there should be a big bureaucracy involved in doing it. You have to remember, just like in business, government's roles are to grow. And people, when they get into these management positions, they want to grow their budgets, they want to grow their staff, they want to do more and more and more. And I think we just need to bring that back.
What are you going to spend the next 8 days doing?
Oh, we're campaigning, so I don't even know where I'm going next, quite frankly, but we're campaigning. We have the debate on, I've been invited to the PTZ debate on Wednesday night. On Thursday, I'm on another talk show on Thursday, but we've been up and down all over the state. So I had a news crew contact me, said, hey, we want to see you campaign, but they were from the Northeast. I said, well, I'm in the southern part of the state. Come down to Rutland if you want to see me. But we'll be up and down all around the state meeting people and greeting people. This has been the most remarkable thing. you know, I have a little girl that plays hockey, so I've been quite a bit all over the state. But sitting down and talking to people, it's amazing some of the things, some of the great things people have done and some of the huge challenges that people face, especially families that have inherited farms and things like that, and now the property tax, they can't afford it. And, you know, it's just brutal.
Tell me a great thing somebody in Vermont's done.
Someone was telling me about how they got tired of working for an employer. They felt that they were trapped, and they went ahead and started this one little software company. They felt they had nowhere to go. They had this great idea, and they started this little software company. It's just a handful of people, but it's growing. They're providing benefits. They're living the good life. They're working long, hard hours, and they've never been more happy in their life, whereas in the past, they felt stuck. They felt, here I am in the industry. I didn't want to take a risk. I went out on my own and actually did it. So when you hear those stories, that's just absolutely incredible. You know, it's really rewarding.
Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
I'll get you a bag of coffee here during a break. Dan Feliciano, the Libertarian candidate for governor. We give all of our guests that come into the studio here a nice half-pound bag of Vermont Coffee Company coffee. This is FM 96.1 WDEV Warren and AM 550 WDEV Waterbury Montpelier. Our White House report coming up next.
Vermont Community Loan Fund borrower and Vermont business owner Bob Light talks about the Vermont Community Loan Fund.
When my wife Lee and I wanted to expand our Hollister Hill Farm bed and breakfast and to expand our farm store, we looked around for a loan. Traditional lenders weren't interested in our business plan. Then we heard about the Vermont Community Loan Fund. The loan fund looks at lending differently. It isn't just about the bottom line. It's about building Vermont's future, Vermont's businesses, and jobs.
The Vermont Community Loan Fund is a mission-driven lender. We focus on people, not profits. We're lending money to Vermont's small businesses to help them succeed.
The loan fund really looked at the whole picture with us. They saw how we were an asset to Vermont. Now, we're growing and proud to contribute to what makes Vermont work.
If you're looking for a business loan, look at the Vermont Community Loan Fund, where we look at lending differently. Visit investinvermont.org.
Plainfield Hardware and General Store has the lowest prices on the largest selection of 6 and 8-inch metal vestas chimney and vent pipe in central Vermont. Take 10% off Cabot solid color acrylic siding stain. One coat coverage, low temp application means you can stain this fall. Be sure to grab delicious creamy milkshake or sundae, now serving real Vermont maple creamies too, before you go. Central Vermont's metal vestas.